A new report shows how the American bank bailout enriched banks overseas.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. You probably think of the TARP, the Troubled Assets Relief Program, as a bailout for the American financial system. The U.S. taxpayer certainly footed the $300 billion bill for all those loans to banks, but a report today says we also bailed out foreign banks. Marketplace's Jeff Horwitz joins me live now to talk about this. Morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Bill.
How did U.S. bailout money make it to banks overseas?
Well, the financial system's totally globalized. That's no surprise to anybody, right? So when the U.S. bails out a big failed insurance company like AIG, AIG's doing business all over the world. Elizabeth Warren chairs this congressional oversight panel for the TARP.
Banks in France and Germany received billions, yet the U.S. bore the whole $70 billion risk of the AIG capital injection program.
When AIG collapsed, AIG was on the hook to lots of banks because it had insured their rotten investments. The panel traced 87 banks that benefited from aid to AIG and found that half of those were foreign.
But Jeff, as you said, the financial system is global and everybody knows that. So why is this a problem?
Well, Warren's frustrated that none of TARP's administrators seem to be keeping track. And the panel found a big imbalance in the global bailout effort. The U.S. rescue gave money to 700 banks all over the world. Warren says the other developed countries' bailout packages combined reached fewer than 50.
If the U.S. had gathered more information about the flow of rescue funds, it could have asked other countries to share the pain.
Warren says if we are so lucky as to have to do this again, we need more international collaboration and a better real-time way to follow the money.
Marketplace's Jeff Horwitz. Thanks, Jeff.
You're welcome, Bill.
A few minutes ago, General Motors reported making $1.3 billion in the last 3 months. Not bad. Auto sales in general have improved this year. In fact, for some models, there is a shortage of new cars. Reporter April Demboski tells us how that happened.
New car sales plummeted after the economic meltdown. They dropped by 6 million between 2007 and 2009. As a result, fewer cars are trickling down to used car lots, and the price of clunkers is going up. Auto industry economist Paul Taylor says that's pushing buyers back to new cars.
People who would normally buy a used car are saying, well, it's not that much more to get the new one.
Trouble is, manufacturers are coming up short on supply, especially when it comes to trucks and sport utility vehicles. When General Motors took the government's bailout money, it also took the recommendation to slash production and focus on smaller, fuel-efficient cars. But American consumers want their SUVs.
There's been times where we've had people practically fistfighting over Equinoxes.
That's Chevy's new midsize SUV. Gordon Stewart owns four Chevrolet dealerships in Georgia, Florida, and Michigan. He says rather than wait 8 weeks for a new Equinox, customers are moving on.
The first place they go is usually either Ford or Toyota.
But those companies are having supply issues of their own. I'm April Demboski for Marketplace.
After yesterday's big Wall Street sell-off, let's check global stocks. Asian markets fell again today by about 1% or so, although shares in Europe are pretty flat now. Yesterday, the Dow Industrials plunged 265 points, and the close was 10,378.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Ally Bank, committed to customer service with the option to reach a human being at any time at 877-247-ALLY by pressing 0.
The letters BP have become synonymous with Gulf oil spill, but they were supposed to stand for Beyond Petroleum, at least according to the company's marketing campaign. Well, some people do want to get beyond petroleum, even in the heart of oil country. Yesterday, we heard from a Texas oil man who has gone green. Now we meet a Louisiana native who set his state up with the strongest solar tax rebates in the nation. Here's Marketplace's Chrissy Clark.
This is the story of how Nick Gautreaux went from being a newly elected state senator for an oil-loving district in southern Louisiana to this.
They call me the godfather of solar.
It's a mantle he's not entirely comfortable with.
Because it's associated with, and I'll be honest, they call them tree huggers. When you talk about green, they think about a tree hugger.
And Gautreaux says in Cajun country, it's not trees, but oil rigs that people embrace, and the jobs that come with them. No tree hugging was involved in the making of The Godfather of Solar. What was involved was a phone call that Gautreaux got soon after he was elected. The guy on the other line was the son of his first grade teacher.
Miss Libin Broussard, her son called me up and he says, look, I'm building a subdivision. Does the state have any type of tax incentives that would help me put solar hot water heaters on these homes? And I said, no, we don't have anything.
And then Gautreaux thought, maybe they should. He knew nothing about solar energy, but he had friends who'd served in Iraq, and he figured anything to help reduce our dependence on foreign oil was a good thing.
You know what? Louisiana is the leader in the oil and gas industry. Why can't we be the leader in alternative energy?
So he wrote a bill, the strongest in the nation, a state tax rebate for homeowners that cut the cost of installing solar panels in half. But when it started moving through the state legislature, he got more phone calls, this time from people he'd never met in the national environmental movement. They wanted to help lobby for the bill.
I put all these people in my iPhone as solar. I just type in solar and they all pop up. And they were saying, man, you just don't know what you got there. We're going to come testify in favor of it. I said, guys, just sit in the background because I'm afraid when there's too many people testifying and all of a sudden it draws attention.
And so quietly, in 2007, Gautreaux got the bill passed. Since then, about 100 solar businesses have cropped up in Louisiana, bringing a whole new set of jobs to the economy. Just don't call them green.
Just talk about good paying jobs. Let's stop the green jobs because, listen, in the oil and gas industry, you hear good-paying jobs. Why do jobs need a color?
I'm Chrissy Clark for Marketplace.
And finally, happy birthday, Sam I Am. Dr. Seuss's Green Eggs and Ham was published 50 years ago today. Publishers Weekly says it's now the fourth best-selling English-language children's book of all time, right behind a book called Tootle, which, honestly, I had never heard of, The Tale of Peter Rabbit, and number one, The Pokey Little Puppy. Here to pay tribute to Green Eggs and Ham, Reverend Jesse Jackson on Saturday Night Live in 1991.
I do so like Green Eggs and Ham. Thank you, Sam I Am.
Well, that was not Jesse Jackson, but here's something else you might not have known. The publisher of Green Eggs and Ham bet Dr. Seuss he couldn't write a kid's book using only 50 words, and you can read that story at Marketplace.org. This is the Marketplace Morning Report in Los Angeles. I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.